Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the WWE Raw show that aired on October 17th, 2011. The show was actually taped on Saturday night in Mexico City, Mexico, which leads me to the question of why you would feature the American broadcast team of Michael Cole and Jim Ross in the main event of the show. Also, why you would do a bunch of promos in English, of course. And, I mean, just a strange decision for WWE. I mean, I know they're playing to the world, but you'd think they'd be a little more friendly to the fans that actually attended the show. You know, it was, they made it out to be an historic occasion in that they were, you know, recording Raw for the first time in Mexico City. But it, I mean, it didn't feel special. And it's probably more importantly, though, as a go-home show for Sunday's Vengeance pay-per-view, I really felt like this was a failure. They just crammed way too many pay-per-views into too short of a period of time. Was this 3 and 6 weeks or 7 weeks, something ridiculous like that? I mean, I have no idea what they're thinking. Creatively, they're not in position to pull this off. Even if things were going great creatively, it would still be too many. WWE seriously needs to consider abandoning the 13 pay-per-view approach that they have now. Go with 12. And I know I'll get emails from people saying that, well, if you do that, you know, do the math, that's taking off some, you're trimming some, if you give up a pay-per-view, you've got to make up that revenue on other pay-per-views, and it's tough to do. And I still think that you're encouraging, or you lead people to believe that, or you show them essentially, if they can't afford to buy all these pay-per-views, the interest just isn't there. I'm a big believer in if you miss one, you know, let's say it's just kind of a habit to you. Because I've been through this as a sports fan. Minnesota Wild, for instance, I used to watch, I'd record every game. And, you know, if I didn't watch all of them, but I'd certainly watch as many of them as I could if I couldn't watch them live. And then the team kind of took a turn for the worse. And I'd miss a game here and I'd miss a game there. And suddenly it's like, you know, I'm really not missing that much. And I think that happens with wrestling pay-per-views, too, where there are people that would like to order all the shows, but whether it's a financial issue with WWE raising the pay-per-view prices at the same time that some systems, such as DirecTV, gouge people for the HD feed, or the number, that they're not into the product and they just don't feel like spending money on 13 pay-per-views a year, I think it indirectly, those fans start to go, you know, I missed that pay-per-view. I really don't need to see this next pay-per-view. It doesn't look that good. And so, I mean, I just think you're driving people away from your product that would like to keep up on everything by having just this ridiculous number of pay-per-view events, especially at a time when the NFL's on. I mean, it's to me, I don't know when you do it. I've said that before because, you know, the NFL season goes from September through December as far as the Monday night schedule goes and Sunday night schedule goes. But and I guess, of course, into the playoff now, too, that they've changed their approach a little bit. But it's more Saturday night than Sunday night that's affected with that. So you don't want to do it during the summer months. I mean, you don't want to over-schedule shows around WrestleMania. So I don't know when you do it. I just say hopefully with the WWE Network approaching next year, some of these shows do get moved. If not, you know, if even one of them gets moved, I can live with the monthly pay-per-view, but WWE, I mean, the timing just couldn't be worse with football season going on, with WWE being creatively flat. It's just too many. But as for this actual show, we'll work our way through it as usual. But first, I want to give a quick couple of plugs. On the .NET membership site right now, there is a story regarding a wrestler who wasn't very happy with something that transpired leading into the TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view. The .NET members are getting the first look at that. They also get almost daily audio shows, whether it's the .NET Weekly Audio Show, which is the flagship show on the .NET site, where Chris Shore and I run through and analyze all the news of the week. We break news in that audio show. It doesn't even make its way onto the site before it's done in audio form. Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett do the .NET Countdown show on Wednesdays, where they review the top five best and worst moments of the week. There is, and if you like this raw audio review, I do this each and every week, generally on the night of the show. Every once in a while, I'll push it back to Tuesday like I'm doing here today. and all the pay-per-view audios. Chris Shore, Will Pruitt, and I got together for, I think, 113 minutes when it came to the TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Q&A audio sessions as well, and it's on the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. There is a members forum with a bunch of good people that you can correspond with in there, and plenty of other perks, and the best part is it starts for as low as $5.50 a month if you take that annual option. If you just want to try it out for a month, give it a shot, $7.50. And you can sign up if you're listening to this on iTunes or elsewhere by heading on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up area right there on the main page, and you can receive almost instant access to all those features if you sign up right now. Also, this afternoon I will be making my weekly appearance on the PW Torch livecast that is available at blogtalkradio.com beginning at 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. The Torch's Wade Keller and I will be taking your phone calls. It is a free audio show, so it's basically free audio Tuesday here. And there is an after show that is available exclusively to our respective members as well. But 1 hour of free audio, and sometimes it goes a little bit longer even, depending on the format, but at least 1 hour, and again, those calls from you are welcome. We can talk about whatever the heck you want to talk about, and Keller also handles email questions. So if you can't listen live for whatever reason, check out more info at pwtorch.com or blogtalkradio.com, and send in your questions that way. All right, having said that, we'll get into running through this show. Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler were on commentary. We did get the polarizing Nickelback theme song. I've always said, everyone has different musical tastes. That's a polarizing band. It really is. I mean, there's some people that love them. I consider them chick rock, and I know there's a lot of people out there that just don't like the band, and I consider myself among them, and I really wish they'd shake up their music and get a little more modern. I mean, it's a Nickelback song, and then you go to SmackDown, and that overplayed Green Day song that was overplayed long before WWE got around to using it. So there's my monthly rant on WWE's theme music. But Justin Roberts introduced John Laurinaitis as the interim general manager. And then we got a video that recapped the Triple H saga from a week ago. And Laurinaitis teased the crowd that Rey Mysterio was returning, and then added that he was actually returning to his doctor in San Diego for a follow-up on his injured knee. And he said he won't let the board of directors down and made a mistake when he fired Jim Ross. And he ended up bringing out Jim Ross. The Oklahoma fight song played, and this didn't get a whole lot of reaction from the fans in Mexico City, the fight song, that is. Cole wasn't very happy. He was pissing and moaning on commentary. And Ross ended up coming out. He shook Jerry Lawler's hand and was about to join the broadcast team when Laurinaitis stopped him and asked him to join him in the ring for a public apology. Ross enters the ring and is bombarded with a big hug from John Laurinaitis, which I did laugh at. That was pretty comical, given the dynamic between their characters. And then a video recapped Cole and Ricardo Rodriguez trying to lead the crowd in singing the goodbye song last week. Laurinaitis put his arm around Ross and said he'd like to settle their differences, the differences between Ross and Cole on Raw, and then he announced the main event of the show would be Jim Ross and John Cena teaming to face Alberto Del Rio and Michael Cole. Ross stood in the ring and pointed at Cole, who flipped out, stood on top of the desk, and played up the friction between the two. And then that was it for that segment. Randy Orton's music played, and we got his intro leading into a commercial break. When we came back, some highlights of Cody getting the better of Orton and delivering that really maniacal, over-the-top laugh that I can't believe they replayed, because I thought it was one of the cornier moments of a pretty corny show last week. Then it was time for the first match. They did also announce that Randy Orton will face Cody Rhodes at the pay-per-view on Sunday. No sign of the Intercontinental title being on the line. It's just generally not how they do things. You know, if a former world champion who isn't that far removed from being world champion faces the secondary title holder, they usually don't even bother to give you a reason why that title's not on the line. It's not as bad as when, the top guys will face tag team champions and clearly have no interest or, storyline. There's no mention even made that, why they wouldn't want to go after the tag titles. But I wish they'd come up with something, like Rhodes is ducking it or, something along those lines to explain it. I probably care more about that than I think that the average person out there, though, does. The first match was Mark Henry, Cody Rhodes, and Christian beating Orton, Sheamus, and John Morrison in 12-10. They kind of set up the various pay-per-view matches here by having Cody and Orton brawl to the back. Well, actually, Orton was dominating that fight. So they disappear. Then Sheamus and Christian brawl into the crowd. They disappear. leaving Morrison and Henry, designated job guy lately. John Morrison takes the fall for his team. He got some offense in, but Henry caught him coming off the ropes and basically threw him into the air, caught him, and then performed the world's strongest slam to get the pin. And I thought it was a pretty good finish to that match, and the live crowd was definitely into it with a good chunk of star power in there. By the way, the SmackDown ratings have been up lately, and you know, a lot of question, is it Mark Henry? Is there another factor? Why are those ratings going up? I think Henry is a factor, but I also, you can't rule out the fact that these SmackDown guys are getting more FaceTime on Raw. Now, I wish WWE would do a better job of creating synergy between the shows. He did a great job of advertising Big Show and making that seem like a big deal a couple weeks ago for SmackDown. Big Show's return to that program. But then last week, they just didn't really advertise much of anything, even though they had a 41-man battle royal they easily could have promoted and a number of other things that were advertised to the local market. And they just chose not to. This week, no real matches advertised that I recall. It's possible that every once in a while I'll miss something when it, you know, because they play those videos coming out of a commercial, and which again, or leading into the commercial break, which I just don't think is enough, but those ratings are going up. So I guess probably a combo of Mark Henry doing a really good job as champion, but also these SmackDown wrestlers appearing on Raw. And I was worried that it was going to work just the opposite. I got to admit that guys, you know, viewers would get their fill of seeing those top stars from SmackDown on Raw every week unless the company did a better job of leading into SmackDown, but it hasn't worked that way thus far. Those ratings are up, and WWE has to be very pleased by that. I know there's some people who feel like that means that there's no way they should consider moving to Tuesday nights now. Hey, the ratings are for Friday are going up. I don't necessarily see it that way. I still think that, you know, you could really, I mean, it would require WWE to show some discipline, but you could really create some synergy. I think it's easier to tomorrow night on SmackDown rather than coming up on Friday. You know, if they wanted to really hype a live SmackDown on a regular basis for Tuesday nights, I think the rating would go up even more. I don't know if we're ever going to find out. You know, the WWE does have another live edition coming up, I think, late November, but it doesn't look like there's any full-fledged plan for the show to move just yet. We did get a video that showcased Brodus Clay, and this time we get to do some talking. It'll be interesting to see how they position him compared to Mark Henry. I mean, there's certainly some similarities in the style that both guys use, and so that's one to keep an eye on. They really haven't exactly, you know, until we start seeing him on Raw or SmackDown winning matches, you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly what they're going to do with him. But I like that they're showing some, putting some focus on Brodus. He's been wrestling on superstars quite a bit, but let's face it, how many WWE fans pay attention to superstars? But so we'll, you know, keep an eye on that one. And we got John Laurinaitis on the phone when the celebrity whore Bella Twins entered the room and they kissed his ass and, in fact, kissed him on the cheek, literally. And once they left, Ricardo Rodriguez entered. Alberto Del Rio stormed in. He was all hot about the main event tag match. And Laurinaitis told him that the winner of the match, the tag match that is, will actually get to choose the stipulation for the title match on Sunday. And for some reason, this made Del Rio content. I'm not sure why. He was so frustrated about it. Why that would, I mean, I guess it's, maybe he thought suddenly, well, if I win, I can make it a non-title match. You got me. Cole announced that Beth Phoenix would defend the WWE Divas Championship against Eve at the pay-per-view. And, of course, that led to Eve defeating Natalya. Shocking, right? I mean, it's we've seen Eve kind of be the fall girl for Kelly Kelly lately. They're tied at the hip, and when they want to make Beth or Natalya look strong, Eve's the one who loses. So I have no idea what she's actually done to earn this title match, but I guess it doesn't matter to WWE. Eve performed a moonsault on Natalya to get the win there. And then after a commercial, we got announcer hype for the Triple H and CM Punk versus Miz and R-Truth match at Vengeance. And then CM Punk made his entrance, and the Miz and R-Truth came out. They did the You Suck routine while Punk just kind of sat in the ring, kind of almost rolling his eyes at the whole thing. And I feel the same way. I mean, I liked the You Suck thing at first when they were basically playing the same characters a while ago. But that's the problem. They did all this firing. They had the big beatdown angle at, I think it was Hell in a Cell. I really thought that was a chance to give those characters a little bit more of an edge. And instead, they just came back as the same guys. They're still doing the You Suck gimmick. I really thought last week or whatever it was they were, these shows start to run together after a while, but when Laurinaitis introduced their return, and they came out doing the You Suck thing, it just told me right there, right then and there, nothing has changed. These are still upper mid-card to low-end main event guys. Yeah, Miz has been WWE champion, but he was a chicken shit heel. There's a difference. You know, I think they needed to give these guys a bit more of an edge so that when they're in there with CM Punk and Triple H or other top stars, they're perceived as threats, not just will they cheat to win, but, wow, this is going to be a tough match for Triple H and CM Punk. And it doesn't feel like that at all. We ended up getting, so we get that, and then Triple H comes out to be in Punk's corner, and they go to a commercial, and they come back. It's CM Punk with Triple H for part of the time, defeating The Miz in about 16:20. Truth, of course, in Miz's corner. They did an angle in the middle of this where John Laurinaitis came out with four Hispanic men in suits and said that it had to stop. And everyone, I think the idea was that we were supposed to think he was referring to R-Truth, who had slammed a water bottle over Punk's head. I'm still not sure, unless the thing's frozen, why that would hurt. If you ever want to experiment at home, I think I can safely tell you, take a plastic water bottle and hit yourself with it. I don't think you're going to do a lot of damage. Now, some of you, it might, depending on, I'm teasing. I have not conducted this experiment at home, but you know what? Maybe I will one of these days in .NET Audio. I'll just wind up and slam myself over the head with a plastic water bottle, and hey, maybe I'll find out, Jesus, it really hurts, and I'll knock myself out cold. But I don't think so. But anyhow, all joking aside, it just looks corny to me. But Laurinaitis was not referring to that. He was actually talking about Triple H, who was chasing R-Truth at the time. Laurinaitis said there was a problem involving Hunter, and it was actually due to an immigration issues with his papers. And Hunter made it, kind of like nice timing here. And they go to a commercial, and when they come back, there was highlights of Laurinaitis telling Hunter that they would get things straightened out, and Hunter left with the immigration officials. And by the way, one of those immigration officials had a mohawk. Not what you think of when you think of immigration officials. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere in the world that really does have a mohawk, but call me crazy if I want to try to actually make people think they're legit. I'm going to kind of just make them look like stuffy people in suits. That's just me. Laurinaitis, after Hunter left, he fired off a text, and the locker room lawyer, David Otunga, was standing by his side at the time. So Laurinaitis is still texting away, and we're supposed to wonder who he's texting, and I don't think very many people actually care anymore at this point. And back in the ring, I mean, it wasn't a bad match. It's just, again, I don't see Miz as a threat to win when he's in there with the top guy. And I think Punk, he's lost some momentum for sure. But, they still see him somewhat as a top guy, a notch below Triple H and Cena. But he's in that mix at least. And it was a good long match, but I just never thought, unless there's cheating involved, that Miz was going to go over. And ultimately, Punk threw Miz into Truth and then rolled him up to get the win. And then after the match, the heels work Punk over, and that was when they're supposed to get their heat back, and now we're supposed to want to see Punk and Triple H kick their asses, and I just don't feel that way. They left the ring and played to the crowd. R-Truth ran back to the ring, hit his finisher on Punk, and then Miz acted like he was trying to calm down R-Truth, but when the referees turned their attention to R-Truth, Miz also hit his finisher on Punk as well. It's just, they need to do a better job of making their top heels seem more important than they do right now. It's just that simple. And Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler then announced the big news that the first show of the WWE Network has a name due to fan voting. It's that WrestleMania retrospective show, and it's going to be called WrestleMania Rewind. Woo-hoo! And Cole boasted about how he was going to beat Jim Ross later in the show. And they're also teasing that the show where a bunch of former WWE wrestlers are going to live in a house together, and they're going to do a reality show based on that. That they're looking for a name for that too. So if you care about that, you can vote at the WWE website. That one, I think, has, I think this network is going to be a disaster. I really do. I mean, I'm not saying there won't be some entertaining things on there. I'm more concerned about them getting deals done to get this thing on the air. If they don't buy an existing network, then they have to negotiate with everyone, and that can be a long process. Now, there have been times where a DirecTV or a Dish Network will strike a deal quickly if, say, Comcast won't get on board, or just the opposite. But, generally with these things, it can take some time. I remember in my area when the Minnesota Twins tried to launch Victory Sports, they were going to launch their own network. Just on the local level, they had a really hard time getting everyone on board, and they eventually had to scrap the network. And, WWE carries some weight in the pay-per-view industry, and certainly they're a popular show in the cable ratings, but I just don't know if it's going to be a slam dunk that they get clearance on all these various cable and satellite platforms, and then who advertises on this? I mean, hopefully they've done their homework, and I just think this could really be a disaster for WWE, but certainly it's going to be an intriguing story to follow along with as we get closer to the launch in 2012. Vicky Guerrero came out. She did the excuse me bit, and I think she got genuine heat. That was the thing. When they did the promos in the ring that were in English, I think they were piping in some canned heat, but it looked like she was actually getting legit heat, and she announced that her team will challenge Air Boom for the tag titles on Sunday. Still not sure what Swagger and Ziggler have done to earn a tag team title shot either. I mean, WWE just stopped caring about this. They don't even try to come up with reasons why these title matches are happening. They just, well, we need a match, let's just throw it out there and announce it. And it's more than a small detail to me. I want to feel like there's a reason these matches are happening, not that they feel the need to fill time on a pay-per-view and advertise something. Again, give me more than that. But Ziggler cut a really good promo. He said he knows that many of the fans there wish they could leave Mexico and never return, just like he does. And he boasted about the United States of America. And then Swagger asked the fans to stand so that he could sing the national anthem. And he sang a horrible version of the Star Spangled Banner intentionally, and the crowd booed. It was funny. The thing I liked about Ziggler wasn't so much what he said, but how he said it. He's starting to break through in that area. They need to give him more mic time. I still believe either Vicky Guerrero needs to become more of a serious character that isn't that fan that, isn't that woman that the fans love to hate, or Dolph needs to break away from her somehow. Because it's just a little too much mid-card comedy. And I think Dolph can be a player. The one big thing missing is just that mic ability. And I think he's starting to show signs that he's improving in that area. And if he can get that down, I see no reason why this guy can't be a main event player for WWE. So this was a step in the right direction. Again, not the context of what he said, or just not the dialogue, but just the delivery, the poise, and kind of the sense of humor that he showed here were encouraging. And hopefully he can get more mic time and keep that going, because I do think that that guy has a lot of upside. Fourth match was Zack Ryder beating Jack Swagger, Vicky and Dolph in Swagger's corner. 35 seconds. Swagger went on the offensive. Ryder caught him with the Rough Rider and scored the quick pin. That was it. And then Ryder and Kofi Kingston just beat Swagger and Ziggler on SmackDown, if memory serves. So again, what the hell have Ziggler and Swagger done to earn this tag title shot that they're getting? And the fifth match, we had Mason Ryan come out when the heels were roughing up Zack Ryder, and a big smile for Mason Ryan again. I've nicknamed him Big Smiley. He can go with Little Batista for sure, but I think he's actually bigger than Batista. I've also nicknamed him the Red Flag Mason Ryan for a reason. My God. But Ryan took the mic and said that they have a match, and Cole said it was coming up after the break. Ziggler was trying to leave, but basically Ryan didn't want him to leave. I think that was the gist of it. And then the fifth match was Dolph Ziggler with Vicky and Swagger beating Mason Ryan by DQ in what was apparently a non-title match. Ryan ignored the referee's orders at one point and was disqualified. They've been pulling out this finish a little bit more and more. To me, it seems lazy. I know in the past, Vince has gone on these kicks. Vince McMahon has gone on these kicks where we need to give the referees more credibility. And when they count to five, it should mean something. And then they'll do these. But it doesn't seem like they're really, even though they're doing it a little more often, it's coming across like a lazy finish to a match that they don't really want to have a definitive winner to than it is Vince really trying to establish the referees again. That's my perspective on it anyway. Certainly seems like they're building up to Ryan versus Ziggler. Wouldn't shock me if they put the U.S. title on Mason Ryan at some point, and that would free up Ziggler, hopefully, for bigger things as a singles wrestler, but you never know. It could free him up to do more tag stuff with Jack Swagger or even a feud with Jack Swagger. And I just think it's time to focus on whether, even if you want to move him to SmackDown and do it there, I don't care, but I think Ziggler's time has come. To push him as more of a top singles guy. Backstage, John Cena entered Jim Ross's locker room, and Ross was bitching about Michael Cole, calling him arrogant, smarmy, rodent-like, and even a son of a bitch. And Cena said that he'd help Ross get his hands on Cole. And then at ringside, Cole reacted to that video, and he was healing it up before heading backstage. And he told the crowd that his wife is Mexican, so they have to cheer him. And we got a Be a Star video. This one had some celebrities mixed in, the usual suspects, including the girl from Modern Family that did the movie with Triple H. And so we get all sorts of bullying on Raw, but don't be a bully also at the same time. Thank you for that, WWE. Did you all enjoy your National Be a Star Day? I think it was October 12th, I think. Yeah, so I don't know how you celebrated yours. My family, we had a big get-together, and it wasn't quite Thanksgiving. We just had a big family get-together and opened gifts for Be a Star Day. Then WWE patted themselves on the back about Raw and SmackDown now being number one and number two on the list of the longest-running weekly television shows in history. And, this comes up. I get emails about it, like, how can, there's been other shows that have been on longer. They're talking weekly episodic, so things like 60 Minutes isn't episodic. The Tonight Show isn't weekly. Things like that. They're looking for technicalities here. I'm sure there's shows that have actually been on longer. But it's WWE, and they kind of make some things up as they go on, as they go along. I don't know what this. I don't know why they are so giddy about this. I don't think anyone goes, yeah, they're the longest running. That's what I watch. But I guess it fills 20 seconds or something. But I wonder if that's why they loaded up that SmackDown show with the 41-man Battle Royal and the two title matches. And because I was like, are they moving the show to Tuesdays? Is this going to be a live special? What's going on? And I wonder if they were, because SmackDown just passed, I think it was Gunsmoke, to become number two on the WWE list. And so I wonder if the idea they were going to make a big fuss over it and then decided that, maybe not. I just speculating. I don't even know if that even entered their mind. But Josh Matthews took over on the commentary team along with Jerry Lawler, and they ran through the pay-per-view lineup. And everything had already been announced by this point, and I just didn't do much for me. Ricardo Rodriguez introduced Alberto Del Rio, who drove into the building in a sports car. And then we got the ad for SmackDown that hyped Del Rio facing Big Show from Mexico City. See, that's how effective those advertising that advertising for SmackDown is. I didn't even remember. They go from a commercial break into that, and I mean, I know you guys aren't always watching like I do, where I got a laptop and everything else, and so if I can sneak out of the room for a minute to grab a drink of water or whatever, I might miss something. But I don't think it's all that effective, and I don't know why you don't make a bigger deal during the context of the show, like they did with Big Show. I mean, I don't think they're going to care because their ratings are up, but I still think there's nothing stopping them from, within the show, making a big fuss out of what's coming up next on SmackDown, or even what just did happen on SmackDown. I think that would be effective, too. Then we got Rodriguez introducing Michael Cole, and then Jim Ross and John Cena made their respective entrances. Cena got a big pop coming out, and I was like, wow, this crowd isn't very pro-Alberto Del Rio. They really like Cena. But then as the match started, things changed. So Cena gets, it sounded like a babyface pop primarily when he came out. But then as the match went on, then it became what you see everywhere else pretty much with the women and kids cheering John Cena. And I would say Mexico, it was even louder cheering against John Cena. Obviously, Alberto Del Rio being involved may be part of that given his heritage. But we'll see what I'm curious to see how they go, what the crowd's response is for Big Show when he faces Del Rio. I don't think they're making Del Rio out to feel like a major, major star in Mexico. I mean, I don't know if they want him to become a babyface in Mexico. I wouldn't have a problem with it if he was. I mean, look how fun the Bret Hart stuff was back in the day when he was a hero in Canada and almost, you know, everywhere else in the world, but not in the United States. So I hope this wasn't, let's make Del Rio look weak in WWE, so that he doesn't get over in Mexico. I mean, take what you can get. I mean, if the guy's a star, I mean, you're not in Mexico enough television-wise that it should matter. Let those fans cheer him. You know, we got a little bit of Ross and Cole to start, and Ross basically smacked Cole alongside the head, and Cole fled to ringside. Ross was wearing a Sooners jersey and jeans, and Cole was wearing his usual wrestling gear, so I thought. I do have an Oklahoma fan telling me that it looked at this person like Cole wasn't wearing or was wearing the colors of a rival team that wasn't Texas. I guess I just assumed it was Cole wearing orange for Texas because he's from there, and I think he is a legitimate Longhorns fan, and it plays into his rivalry with Jim Ross. But I think it was at Texas A&M, so whoever's actually leading that. I'm not a big college football guy. I'm definitely an NFL guy. But this person thought that Cole's gear was whoever's leading that conference right now was, you know, that color scheme for that school. I couldn't tell you. But I'll defer to that person who, again, said that much like Jim Ross, this person's a big Oklahoma fan. So I'm thinking he would know better than I would. But this was, you know, I mean, why would the Live? I mean, they certainly are aware of Jim Ross and Michael Cole. They know who they are, but it just so it's not like these are just people they never see on when the show airs in Mexico. You know, Ross and Cole have both been involved in angles and storylines, but and Ross did seem genuine. You know, the fans seem to genuinely like Ross and dislike Cole, but it just seems so odd to me that you would do this match in Mexico. I wonder if WWE. You know, I mean, I think they just overreacted, maybe not even overreacted, but I think it was a reaction to the ratings last week. We had the quarter hours up, and, you know, when they fired Jim Ross, that's when the ratings really went down. And you could also, well, is it Jim Ross or is it John Laurinaitis that the fans are kind of burned, you know, they don't want to see him in power, they don't care about power. Was it, you know, I'm sure it was other factors, too, with the show quality being so bad. Once, you know, I think people tuned in to see what would happen following the walkout angle. And then when that started to end, well, things are back to normal and John Laurinaitis is in charge, I can see why people would tune out. But I think WWE, because Ross wasn't scheduled for this Mexico show, what he's putting out there on Twitter is legitimate about, you know, from the standpoint that it wasn't like he was, you know, the plan all along was to fire him, but then he'd show up back on Raw the next week. So I know that much. And so I think WWE may have been reacting to either ratings or just some of the feedback they got with people not happy about the way they treated Jim Ross again in Oklahoma City again. And they decided to go with this match, but it didn't just odd that they would go with this in Mexico City, in my opinion. But basically what happened here in this one, you know, obviously it was mostly Del Rio and John Cena in the ring. It wasn't like the ring work was so good that now I'm just suddenly really excited about their match on Sunday. There was a cool spot, though, where Cena, what did he? He was going for the attitude adjustment, I think, and Del Rio ended up countering that with the German suplex, if memory serves. I can't remember what Cena was going for, but it was a cool spot. Yeah, that was exactly. It was kind of early on when Cena did that. And good German suplex. That one was worth noting. But, you know, so Cena hits a five-knuckle shuffle on Del Rio, who then runs to his corner and tags in Cole. Cena flipped Cole into the ring, and then Cole was begging John Cena. And then Cena just shook his hand. And, well, Cole was trying to get him to shake his hand. Cena grabbed it and then just pulled him into the attitude adjustment. He hit it. And tease, I don't know if he was teasing that he was going to go for an ankle lock or if that was going to be the setup for the STF, but he stopped, looked at Jim Ross and tagged him in, and Jim Ross actually applied the ankle lock and Cole tapped out. And so Cena and Ross get the win that way. And then it was time for the post-match angle with Cena and Ross celebrating, and then Ross leaves. Del Rio reaches in and pulls Cena to ringside. I'm like, oh, beatdown angle? Nope. Cena quickly recovered and hit the attitude adjustment on the floor and then took the mic and just started counting. One, two. And as Del Rio was struggling to get to his feet, he was doing this. Del Rio actually made it up at 7, and Cena quickly clotheslined him back down, tore apart the ring steps, ran part of the ring steps into Del Rio, and then sat down on that piece of ring steps, and this time counted to 10. And he said, it doesn't take a genius to figure out why he was counting to 10. And I added, but you do need to know how to, you do need to know English. Just saying. And then Cena said that he would face Del Rio in a last man standing match at the Vengeance pay-per-view. That was how the show ended. That was it. Not a good go-home show. So do you want the title back? I mean, we have yet to hear from John Cena since he lost the championship. Talk about losing the title, why it bothers him, how badly he wants it back. There's been none of that. And, you know, I groaned. As bad as last week's show was, I think the biggest groan moment for me was when they advertised Cena challenging Del Rio again. You know, it's just too much Cena in that title picture. I think people are ready for something different, and we're not getting it. And, you know, it's not that they have bad matches, and I'm not a big anti-John Cena guy, but I certainly can see when this guy, you know, it's feeling stale. And, yeah, he still gets a lot of cheers, but that, you know, the people that are still into the product and are still into John Cena are going to the shows and cheering him. But you have to wonder how many people aren't going to the shows and are just kind of bored with the product because they keep building so much around him. And I don't think this is doing good for his character to constantly be involved in the title picture, to win it, to lose it, to not, you know, there's really, when he wins it, there's not the big celebration because it doesn't mean anything. And when he loses it, it's like he's not even acknowledging that he lost it and how badly he wants it back. And so it makes the title look bad. If you look at the title as a prop, as I think WWE does sometimes, that, you know, it's not an effective prop because you're just giving, you know, you're treating it like it doesn't matter. And it becomes one less thing you can promote around. And I think that's where things are at right now. They need to slow down whoever the champion is going to be, even if it's Cena, which I'm not saying I want to see. But no matter who the champion is going to be, I think you need to settle in on that person for a while and stop with all the rapid-fire title changes that don't mean anything. I don't know that they're actually going to go with Rock versus Cena in a title match now. I've never liked that idea. I don't think you need the belt involved in that. The match is just big enough without it, and you can use the title to make another match at WrestleMania feel really special. So, if Del Rio's going to be the guy for a while, then let's not do the two-week title change. There was no reason for Cena to win that title back for 2 weeks and Del Rio to take it from him. That never should have happened. This match might mean more to people if they hadn't done that. And Del Rio would certainly feel like he's a little more important champion, not just a guy that, well, he's already lost it. You know, I mean, come on. Slow down when it comes to the title changes. And just Raw in general, they really put themselves in a bad spot. I wasn't all that fired up about that last night's show. It was certainly better than the train wreck that was the week before when people, like I say, tuned in to see the fallout from the Triple H angle. But then by the time the show ended, a lot of those viewers had disappeared because the show was so awful. But they've really put themselves in a bad spot creatively with a number of these characters. Very few of them seem like they're very hot. I mean, think about how over CM Punk was, if nothing else, with the hardcore or online fans, whatever you want to call them, at least he was really over with somebody, you know, and he's cooled off, I think, with those fans. Maybe it didn't catch on and with the casual fans, and maybe he wasn't a huge rating success, but at least someone was feeling really passionate about that guy. A portion of their viewing audience was, and it doesn't feel like that anymore. And there's just, boy, I mean, I don't like where their feuds are. I don't see great things ahead. I don't care about John Laurinaitis in his role. He's not a good talker when you have him out there. He's fun in small doses, you know. But as we saw on a pre-taped show, he's stumbling over words, forgetting lines. He's just not effective. I don't think the voice is like a good TV voice even, you know. And I just don't think the fans care about him. They boo him, but is it good heat or is it go away heat? And I don't know the answer to that. I'm guessing it's probably a combination of both. But I'm tired of people fighting for power or control of these wrestling companies. It bored me in TNA with Immortal and Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. taking power away from Dixie Carter, and it's boring me in WWE to have Triple H lose power, and now John Laurinaitis is in charge, and oh, but he's only the interim GM. We're going to get another GM, and I just, I might just guess on this, is that Mick Foley will become the GM again. I don't even know. But regardless of who it is, I can't say that I'm counting down the days until, you know, anxiously awaiting to see who that next GM is. For all we know, for God's sake, it could be the anonymous general manager who's just disappeared. And that's part of the issue, too, is that when you tease things for, you know, that people really get excited about, people were really into that anonymous general manager thing for a while, speculating who could it be, where's this going, and then they never play it out. Well, why should we care the next time when you tease us that there's going to be another GM? I think they'll actually pay this one off, and then we will get along, you know, someone will replace Laurinaitis, but I think people are becoming more and more numb to these control of the company storylines. I don't give credit to that storyline for popping the big rating to start the show, the 3.6 for both the first and second quarter hours last week. It was more of a spectacle. It was, you know, wow, all these guys walked out, so now what? Not, I care about who's in control of the company. It was like, well, what are they going to do? There's only five guys advertised, everyone else walked out. So I just don't think you can say that it's because people really care about who's in charge. It's old, it's tired, and I'd like to see them, you know, Jim Ross would be the ideal candidate for me because, you know, because Vince McMahon is so vain and he's so worried about Jim Ross cosmetically, that if Jim Ross was the general manager, his face time would be limited, which is exactly what WWE needs. I'm all for going back to the old days where guys like Jack Tunney in WWE and Stanley Blackburn in the AWA, you know, you'd see them once in a while when they needed to issue a big ruling, but otherwise it was the championship committee this, championship committee that, and you didn't see these big fight for power. You know, you put the focus on the actual talent, the guys who are really going to sell the pay-per-views, the guys who go on the road, the true stars of the company, not a bunch of mostly non-wrestlers that people don't pay to see. Hopefully they'll put an end to this eventually. But a better show than last week, but I thought a failure as a go-home show. I don't know what they could have done to really get me excited about Sunday's Vengeance pay-per-view. I mean, on paper, it looks like it could be a good show in terms of match quality. You know, you never know what the finishes are going to be, if it's going to be overbooked or they're just going to let the guys do their thing. But there's nothing that feels special about the upcoming pay-per-view. I mean, I'm more excited about Big Show and Mark Henry than I am anything on that show, and that's kind of sad. I mean, Mark Henry's done a hell of a job, and WWE's put him in a great position, but, I mean, it's just everything else really feels stale. I'm just not getting excited about the rest of their program, so they need to shake things up somehow and pick a direction and hopefully a good one, and if it is, stick with it. I just think right now they're waiting for Rock to return next month to pop a rating, and I'm sure he will. But as I keep saying, you know, just like WrestleMania 27, you can bring in The Rock, and he's going to bring in a lot of viewers that normally don't watch WWE. The trick is have people in positions to catch the eye of those Rock fans that tune in to see him, and, you know, lure them into sticking around after he leaves. WWE failed to do that at WrestleMania 27. And based on where the storylines are right now, I think they're going to fail again with Survivor Series. Obviously, they have another chance to do it with WrestleMania 28, but you're running out of chances. I don't think The Rock is going to be around forever, despite his one statement in that promo, what feels like way back when now. But that is going to do it for me for now. Again, check out the PW Torch livecast this afternoon at blogtalkradio.com at 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. Your calls welcome. And consider ProWrestling.net membership. Again, you can sign up for, if you just want to try it for a month, $7.50, or take the annual option to save yourself a couple of bucks each month for $5.50 if you go that route for the annual option, and you'll get ad-free access, hours of interviews, and just weekly audio shows as well. A number of people interviewed over there, including former WWE creative team member Court Bauer. Former WWE creative team member Seth Mates has joined me to review some of the bigger shows, including WrestleMania. Former TNA creative team member Dutch Mantel's first interview after leaving TNA was with me on the .net site, and he's actually returned, I think, at least once, if not a couple more times, and very good listen there. And the list goes on. There's a number of people who have joined me, and I may have another one coming up this week. So I don't want to give it away, because everyone, it seems like anytime you tease something, then it falls through, you know, if you really put the person's name out there. So I'm just going to bite my tongue, but say there might be something else coming up later this week. So check the site for more details on that, and it will be available exclusively to ProWrestling.net members. Thank you again for listening, and thank you for checking out ProWrestling.net. And I'll talk to you guys later today on BlogTalkRadio.com, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern.